Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
Here's what happened in football history in 1919. A logjam at the top of the college football's top teams. An interesting pre-snap maneuver was introduced, and a powerhouse won over professional football. All this and more in the first season after the Great War is coming up next.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at SportsHistoryNetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And we are in our football history rewind, part number 40. We are all the way up to the year of 1919. And the World War I had just been completed. Yeah, the season of 1919 was highlighted by the return of many football players to the gridiron who had been away for a few seasons serving their country. And it should be mentioned that though there were many others that didn't return to the stripe field as they made the ultimate sacrifice of freedom, were others that suffered such horrific injury in the line of duty that participation in the sport they loved was just beyond their capabilities. But they sacrificed for their country, and they should be honored. And we don't have many of their names because it's a lot of it is lost to history, but we know there had to be a plethora of guys that were playing college football and professional football that were unable to because of the sacrifices they made for their country in World War I. Now, the return of the players who served the game gave the competition of the game a very pronounced boost as opposed to the previous seasons. And there were at least three undefeated teams of note in the 1919 season: Notre Dame, Texas A&M, and Harvard. And an asterisk may accompany Harvard's season, though they did tie a tough Princeton squad 10-10 that year. Well, the A&M story that season is an interesting one. Most of the players, including coach Dana X Bible, were reunited again from the 1917 season on the gridiron after missing all year 1918 to serve duty in the Great War. And it should be mentioned that not only was 1919's Aggie team undefeated in games, but it was also unscored upon. Bible's team played a good caliber competition that season too, with the likes of Texas, Texas Christian, Baylor, and Southern Methodist on their schedule. The Texas A&M team came back to football after a season lapse, remembering the very fundamentals of the game, which greatly led to their success. Now, simply stated, that they were every coach's envy as they blocked and tackled well. Dana Bible reveled in these basic concepts and just pounded them into his practice sessions and enjoyed using the punting portion of his strategy to pin opponents deep and then play some great defense to keep them there, giving his offense an advantage of a short field. Well, the Aggie offense had a formidable and unique look all its own. The initial lineup usually had the guards lining up on each side of the center and the tackle standing directly behind the guards. The ends would initially line up next to the tackles, while the rest of the members of the offensive line were behind the front seven. Prior to the ball being snapped into play, all players except the guards and the center would shift into legal formation and then run the play, most usually from the single wing formation. The odd-looking formation was aptly dubbed the Bible Shift after their great coach. Now, Harvard, on the other hand, they had a record of 9-0-1, like we discussed, a half game better than Penn State's 7-1 in the loss column. Penn State was nevertheless clearly the consensus choice as the Eastern champions among Eastern writers in 1919. And in fact, Harvard was not even considered to be among the top five teams in the East. Decades later, however, when people were selecting national champions from years past, Harvard's 9-0-1 record and Rose Bowl win of 7-6 over Oregon were pretty much what they looked at. In these later years, the opinion of the Eastern football powers and rankings were upside down on what they were back with the writers in 1919. Today, Harvard is thought of as the national champions of 1919, while Penn State is not even among the top four teams listed in the NCAA record books at all. Now, here's how some of the later day experts listed the 1919 winners of the 1919 season in the NCAA record books, all selecting long after the season ended, and this is per the tiptop25.com website. Now, 9-0-1 Harvard was selected by the Helms Foundation, CFB researchers, where they had a tie, Park H. Davis, who said there was a three-way tie, and the National Championship Foundation, who also called it a three-way tie. Illinois, who we didn't really talk about much, they were 6-1, and the CFB researchers said that they were tied for that national championship, and Park Davis agreed as they were part of his three-way tie. 9-0 Notre Dame had Park Davis's third team in that three-way tie. National Championship Foundation agreed with Park Davis and said also Notre Dame was one of the three that were in the tie for the national championship. And 10-0 Texas A&M that were selected by the National Championship Foundation in their three-way tie. So you basically had four teams floating around in there. You know, Notre Dame and Illinois we didn't get to talk a whole lot about, but those are some pretty good squads too. But sort of the two that rise to the top are Harvard and Texas A&M. And it's hard to say who you would deem as that official national championship. So I think we'll go with all the experts and sort of have all four of them in there as national championships, with Illinois being the only one that suffered a loss. So maybe, you know, by today's standards, that would knock them out of it. And the three undefeated teams would be up near the top. But they may eliminate Harvard because of that tie with Princeton, too, and put Notre Dame and Texas A&M. So who knows? That's why we have a bowl championship series now, which takes a lot of that question out of the elements of trying to decide who's the national championship for. Well, in the professional game, the champs in 1919 were the Canton Bulldogs. They were considered by most experts as a top professional team in all of football for 1919. They again won the Ohio State title, even though there was a change of ownership of the Bulldogs from Jack Cusack to Ralph Hay. Yeah, that Ralph Hay, the businessman in Canton, Ohio, who ended up owning the Hupmobile showroom where there was an important meeting that following year in 1920. We'll get to that next time on Football History Rewind. Well, there was Canton Bulldogs had a great roster, headlined by the Native American Gridiron Stars of Jim Thorpe and Pete Kalick, and they were joined in the backfield by Joe Guyon that year. Now, these three studs drove opposing defenses crazy and powered the Bulldogs past all opponents except for a 3-all tie with the Hammond All-Stars. That 9-0 record was better than any other, especially for the fact that they knocked off the likes of Massillon, Akron, and Hammond in the second meeting, and they beat Massillon and Akron twice, Akron Indians and Massillon Tigers, who were big-name teams back at that time and very competitive to the Canton Bulldogs. But Canton beat them all, except for that one tie with Hammond. And that does pretty much sums up the season of 1919 in our Football History Rewind part number 40. We will be back next week with part number 41, and we'll get into a little bit newer era of professional football, and college football starts taking its turns too as these two battle out for supremacy of football and just bring some great delight to the fans all around. So we hope you enjoyed this little bit of football history today. We hope you join us each and every day. Again, you can reach us at pigskindispatch@gmail.com and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Pigskin Dispatch is our call names there. So till tomorrow, everybody, have a great gridiron day.
Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee, and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast.
We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. A special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that, Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts. It's found right here on the Sports History Network.